of NYTS. May God give us strength. Second day should be better than the first day. How many of you slept really well last night? Wow, really, really well because of so exhausted. How many of you didn't sleep at all just because of the snoring again and all the things that's going on? Then the rest of you are something in between, right? At least can survive. Still one piece. And we thank God for that. Now, in the name of Lord Jesus Christ, we would like to continue our studies of the book of Ecclesiastes. Yesterday, we mentioned about chapter 1, chapter 2, the background. What the preacher was trying to say is a lot of things that cherished or valued by human dreams or endeavor seems to be quite empty at the end. And of course, if you just look at the book itself without any background of the faith or Lord Jesus Christ, his salvation, and then you feel this book is kind of pessimistic, right? Pessimistic. This being so negative, everything is meaningless. But once again, everything is meaningless is under one criteria. Let's turn back to chapter 1, verse 2 again. Chapter 1, verse 2. Chapter 1, verse 2. Yeah, brother, start from you, please. Start from you. Chapter 1, verse 2. Okay, so under the sun is the key word. There are two key words here in this book at least, right? The first one is called vanity, which yesterday I explained it, could be translated as air or nothing, right? Vanity, you can translate it into air, just like the air here. You didn't see it, you feel it, but you grab it, it's not there. So it's called vanity. Or another key word in the book is called under the sun.
You can draw better than me. Of course, you can give him a big smile. You watch. So, the book of Ecclesiastes is trying to tell us that you, under the sun, that means you can draw a line, invisible line, by the sun. Because we know that the whole earth is under the sun, right? We are so far away from the sun, but every day we are living under it. Any living creatures, all the physical dimension, cannot be escaping from the sun because our whole earth is under the solar system. So he categorized. Now, when we say vanity or emptiness or vain or what, futile, whatever description, all the things that he is trying to prove. Yesterday we talked about how many things at least he mentioned about is meaningless. So far, what have he tried to prove is meaningless already? Candace? Riches, enjoyment, labor, wisdom. So far he's touched upon that. So he said that all of those are meaningless. So when he say meaningless, it's under the sun. It's not talking about this area. We have not reached there yet. When he say under the sun, that means purely physical world. In the purely physical perspective, when you do all of those things, it's not God-centered. When you do all those things, it's not focused on God. This is called under the sun. Or even you can say even far from God, even drifted away from where he started. At the beginning, he didn't feel vanity at all as a young man, as a young king. He feel all right. He feel blessed. He was close to God. God talked to him in a dream. God gave him what he prayed for. Of course, there was no vanity at that time. But after he departed, or drifted away, then his life becomes just strictly under the sun. Strictly speaking, there's no other dimension. His dimension of the spiritual, this is the spiritual dimension. This is not under the sun. So that concept, we have to put in our mind at the very beginning of the book. Otherwise, the more you study it, the more you find that, wow, that book is so pessimistic, right? Everything is meaningless. Then what am I doing here? NYTS is meaningless too, right? Let's go home. Reading the Bible is meaningless. No, he's not talking about our aspect. He's focused on the upper one. But he has to prove, he has to use chapter 1 to 11 to prove that actually under the sun, without God, or if I drifted away from the truth, everything is just like that. It's not much meaning. But he used chapter 12, the last chapter. He used chapter 12, the last chapter, to prove that, well, actually, you can, even though you're living under the sun, but your life can be transcending from something so meaningless, empty, boring, to actually can get a meaning. Can get a meaning. And it's at the end is to fear God, get ready for judgment, get ready to face your God in your life. And in between this chapter 1 to 11, he also mentioned once in a while some kind of way that you can do, even though living under the sun is boring and meaningless, but you can still do something to make your life more enjoyable within a certain mean and wisdom. So that is very important. It's okay if we can fix it, if we can fix it. It's okay. It's okay. Without a slideshow, we can still survive. Because there's nothing new under the sun, right? Computer work, computer breaks. Slideshow works, slideshow doesn't work. So it's all okay. Even if you see it, sometimes you can forget it. So it's nothing new. It's okay. Don't spend too much time on fixing it. Because it's going to break again in the future, right? This is the perspective of the preacher. Okay. So, yesterday we were in chapter 2, from verse 4 to 11, he was saying that because of the self-centeredness of enjoyment, so he didn't feel the true satisfaction. How many of you have done something really meaningful in helping someone or donating something or offering something or giving a seat to the elderly or just you sacrifice a little bit so your physical self is not very happy, but actually your heart is very happy. Any one of you? For example, anyone have give a seat to an elderly or a pregnant woman in the bus? Any one of you have done that? How do you feel when you give a seat and when you saw the person needed sitting there? Even though you're standing, right? But I think you feel good. You feel good because, or at least, this is something meaningful. Or maybe go for a food bank, volunteer. How many of you have done volunteer work in your college? How do you feel when you do volunteer work? You don't get paid, right? That's why it's called voluntary work. But how many of you feel really good after a whole day of doing voluntary work in school settings? How many of church work? How about church work? Saturday, after a long day of Sabbath, but you go home exhausted, but you're feeling very joyful at the end. Yeah, that is the difference. So when you focus on enjoyment of yourself, there's some kind of satisfaction. But the satisfaction is very limited. And the more you try to do something repeatedly, the marginal satisfaction will be going down. The marginal satisfaction of the return. For example, we really like to eat something, you're craving for it. I don't know what's your favorite fruit or food, right? Lobster, let's say. How many of you really like lobster? Oh, that's good, right? It's expensive, you don't have it every day. But you imagine somebody bring you out or treat you a lobster meal. That's nice, right? And your satisfaction level is so much because you haven't had it for 1 year. Now, if tomorrow, lobster again, you still like it, right? Why not? But every single meal lobster for 1 week, what happened?
you start to throw up. Oh, lobster again, oh, I can't handle it, too much cholesterol. Or oh, just tired of it. You know, we human beings, we get tired of things very easily. New car, new phone, new house, new clothes. Now for Solomon, with his enjoyment, he said at the end of the day, it's just one word, bored. Youth, or even my children sometimes. No, I have three kids. They're only like 10 years old and 12 years old. Always they say one word to me, how wuliao. In Chinese, that means bored. I'm bored. Oh, so boring. Wuliao. Why life is so boring? Actually, you ask the adult, sometimes they can tell you the same thing. Life is very boring. I'm bored. Why? Because the marginal satisfaction of doing the same thing repeatedly again and again will get so low. At the end, you don't find any satisfaction from material, from making yourself happy. Vacation sometimes can be boring at the end of the last few days, right? The first day of vacation can be excited, but the last few days you really want to go home. That's the same thing. So he tried enjoyment, but doesn't really work. So let's continue chapter 2, verse 12. From verse 12 to verse 17, he said that another thing is also meaningless. He came back to that. He tried to prove that once again with another perspective. Yesterday we mentioned about, he said, wisdom and knowledge is meaningless. In chapter 1, verse 17, verse 18. Why? But the reason was, the more you know, the more you worry, right? Oh. Now, he put another perspective of saying that, once again, this wisdom is under the sun. Worldly wisdom is empty. Why he said so? His argument was like this. Let's read verse 13 to 14. 13 to 14 next, please. Brother, can you please read verse 13 to 14? Chapter 2, verse 13. Yes, you please. Sixteen also. And finally, 17. So I hated life, because the work that is done under the sun is beauty. All of it is meaningless, but chasing after the— Once again, meaningless, air, or chasing after the wind, chasing after the air, meaningless. The pursuit of wisdom was meaningless for Solomon, for the preacher, Solomon. Why? What is his reason here? Who can tell me after you read these few words? What is the reason, being smart or being wise? In worldly perspective, it's no use. Anyone? Yes? Brother. Exactly, very good. Now, he sees far beyond just temporarily. If a very wise person, even though he's so wise, he has said so much wise things, he has done so much wise things, eventually has to die. And you are so dumb. You are like a silly person. You know nothing, and you're not educated. You make no good decision. But at the end, you also die. So eventually, the destination is the same. You're very smart, you die. You're very dumb, you die. Then why do you have to be smarter or wiser? That is the argument. And of course, that argument seems right, because if you look at the destination, right? That's why some people are so depressed in this world. They say, we all have to die so sooner or later, right? This is real, I told you. Some people can think, no, we all have to die, right? We all have to die someday. Then why don't die earlier? Save all the trouble. And they commit suicide. Life is so meaningless. Everybody have to die. Die early, save trouble, save the money. I don't have to waste money to live and then waste the trouble to study. So it can be a very depressing view of life, But without God, without meaning, really, if we think like that, life is just like that. So of course, the preacher didn't commit suicide, but he just think that, just to prove that under the sun, being wise doesn't make a huge difference. Because he bring up one point, is death.
Actually, this will come back. What is the factor that make things so meaningless?
It's something called death. Without death, actually, things can have a lot of meaning because things will carry on forever. But when death comes, it will cancel a lot of value.
For example, money. You talk about that. Why money at the end is meaningless?
Even if you're rich, you're super rich. If you ask the super rich people, they will not tell you money is meaningless. They will tell you money is very important. But when death comes to a very rich person, when he's dead, money is no value to him. To him, to other people who are still living, they fight for that inheritance. But to him has no meaning. So when death happens, the value disappears to that person. You are very smart, you're Einstein, you are a scientist, you are a great literature writer. But when death comes to you, you know more meaning. So death is the canceling, we can call it, it's a canceling factor. When death comes, nothing's holding meaning anymore. So he tried to prove that, oh, this is also meaningless, being wise. And verse 18. Now, from verse 18 to 23, he tried to prove another aspect of life is meaningless again.
His labor and toil. He tried to prove labor, hard work, toil is quite meaningless. Even though you are so smart, you earn so much, you save up so much, but
it doesn't really matter. Verse 18. Next, please, brother. Verse 18. Verse 19, continue. Verse 20. Now, in this paragraph, we try to prove that labor itself is meaningless. Why? You labor so hard, you save up some treasure and wealth, but why is it meaningless? Because he has said, you have to leave it to somebody without a choice. Money cannot always be with you. When you die, your money passes to somebody else, whether you like it or not, whether you like that person or not. All right. So he said, I have to leave all this that I have. Yesterday we mentioned about how much money that Solomon has. How many tons of gold every year? How many talents? 666, right? Bible is very meaningful. After one night of thinking and praying, do you get the meaning of 666?
Why the Bible make it 666 for you?
In the Bible, what is the perfect number?
7, right? Then, what is 6 compared with 7? Lacking 1. Doesn't mean it's not perfect. So, he can have a lot of money, but money itself is not perfect. It's imperfection. Even though you have a lot, it cannot fill you. It cannot 100% fill you.
Money is not everything in your life. How many tons of gold that is equivalent to 666 shekel? 20 tons. In the central bank or the bank, in America, there's a lot of Federal Reserve. There's a lot of gold, right? How many tons? I don't know. Maybe a lot of tons. But 20 tons is a lot of money, probably the whole GDP of a whole country. 20 tons of gold reserve. He had a lot of gold reserve, Solomon. But the Bible said it is 666. It is not perfect. It's not everything. So he has so much money. Now, in the past, under the kingdom, money doesn't belong to only government. Money belongs to the king. And he passed on to his son. and sons and children and children. So in verse 19, he said, how do I know whether he is wise or not wise, or foolish or not? First of all, he never labor, but he get what I have. And secondly, if he is so stupid and so evil and so bad, then I work so hard and pass my money to him. What's the point? Now, his history proved that it is right. Who was the son of Solomon? Who can tell me? What's his name? What's the son of Solomon? Rehoboam, yes. Now, was he a very good king or not? He's not that smart. Very much less than his father. After Solomon died, under the reign of Rehoboam, what happened? His kingdom what? Splitted, divided. So Rehoboam only controlled like 2 tribes and a half. But the rest of the tribes, they all left the kingdom. So you can say, in just a few days or few months, the empire built by Solomon dissolved just because his son is so stupid and not listening to the counseling of the old officials, right? The old official told him, you know, people complain to you, taxes are too heavy. What should you say? Say nice word, right? Nice word will save a lot of trouble for you. Young people, remember that, okay? Don't talk harsh. Don't think you are smart. Don't act proud. You are nobody. Even you are smart, pretend you are not smart. Right? And secondly, attitude be nice. That will save you a lot of trouble. Be humble, people will help you. But be proud, people will oppose you. Attitude problem, nowadays young people, it's not that we are lacking the brain power. It's not lacking the IQ. It's not lacking the diploma or degree. What are we lacking? Attitude. Write it down. It saves your lives. Right. Nowadays, what screws us up? Attitude problem. Your attitude to your parent is wrong. Your attitude to your sibling is wrong. Your attitude to the church people is wrong. Your attitude to your boss is wrong. That's why you don't keep your job. That's why you get fired all the time. That's why nobody wants you. Right? Attitude problem. So his son is not wise. And because he was not wise, he has attitude problem. When the people come to talk to him, he listened to his friend. What did his friend tell him? Now, when the people come to tell you to reduce the tax, what should you say? My thumb, what? Is what? Bigger than my father's tummy, the waist. That means I'll do worse than my father. Wow, he talked so big. And what happened? The people, okay, if you want to do this, we don't want to follow you anymore. We'll break off. We are not under one country. So one night, the whole kingdom of Solomon dissolved, splitted. Only 2.5 tribes remain. Just a small province. The size of a small province. So Solomon was very wise, even though he can foresee after his death, his kingdom will not hold. Right? All the money can be gone in one night. And who knows my future generation? What can that be? If you look at history, only a few hundred years after Solomon died. If we say Solomon was living in about 900 years plus BC, 9-something, right? Which year was the Northern Kingdom destroyed by Assyria? Okay, you remember this day, right? 722 BC, the Northern Kingdom was destroyed. 586 BC, the Southern Kingdom was destroyed totally by Babylonian. So you can see, only a few hundred years, all this wealth that yesterday that we show you, all the power, all the achievement of Solomon has come to nothing. Why? Just because his children is not very good. It's not God-fearing, it's not wise. So what's the point of working so hard, you think? Right? It's true if your offspring, if you save so much money for your offspring, but if they don't fear God, they don't have wisdom, they're just a waste. So in the future, don't leave too much money for your children. Of course, it's too early to say that now because you don't have children yet, right? But even if you have children in the future, your goal is not to leave them a lot of money. You know, Chinese people or Asian, let's say as a whole, right? I think Korean the same too. Chinese, Korean, Asian people. You know, Asian people have the same kind of mentality of Jewish people. They work hard. They save up a lot of money. They don't enjoy themselves. They don't enjoy life. And they try to save a lot for the next generation. But actually, sometimes it harm them more than they do good. They harm them. Why? First, they become lazy. If your parents are super rich, there's a term in China called 富二代. Have you heard about that term? 富二代, that means rich second generation. You know, in China, in Beijing, all the, even in Canada, in Richmond, in some place, there's a lot of Chinese immigrants. There's a lot of young people driving Lamborghini, just moving in and out, go to school. When I was in school, I saw some very wealthy immigrant. Now drive BMW, go to high school. He's got his own BMW and Benz, and nowadays BMW or Benz is nothing. They got even nicer sport car. And you look at window, who's driving? A young guy, immigrant. So much money from his father, doing nothing, but in and out with. So he becomes so spoiled and lazy and corrupt. So that leaving so much money for your next generation may not be helping them at all. So for Solomon, he knows that it's just empty. If the next generation of people cannot manage it, then why should I be working so hard? And verse 22, next please, verse 22. Anthony, our brother has read already? Yeah. So, labor, once again, is emptiness. Not only you cannot guarantee your future generation. Also, working so hard day and night without good sleep, worrying so much. This chasing after the wind is not much of the meaning. So he's just focusing, building up his theme. Now, working so hard, saving up for next generation, doesn't mean much. But of course, at the same time, he mentioned about something positive. Next, let's read verse 24. Next. Continue, 25. Now, even though life is meaningless, working hard is meaningless, building up wealth is meaningless, saving for your next generation is meaningless, but the preacher here bring out something different perspective. He said that, actually, under this material world emptiness, what is true blessing? Being able to enjoy it is more important than just owning it. Because this is the hand of God. Okay, God put us under this labor because we are all under sin. But if you work hard and you're able to enjoy it somehow, it is already considered a blessing. It's already considered a blessing. But if you cannot enjoy it, then it's not a blessing from God. So for those who are pleased by God, even though you live in this physical world, you earn money, it sounds very empty, but you find a way to enjoy it. And that theme will come out later. It will continue. So just remember it, first mention it here. He's telling us owning is not the most important. We must go from owning it to
enjoy it
with a positive attitude.
Not indulging enjoyment, but with a positive attitude.
So he'll build this sub-theme. This is not the biggest theme. The bigger theme is you have to fear God, spiritual life, all that. But the smaller theme, the positive thing is, even the life is so empty, but you can still find something positive. That's why we need holiday, right? That's why we need to get married. That's why you buy yourself nice clothes if you can enjoy it, right? That's why if you can afford it, buy yourself a nice apartment, you can live. So there are still positive things in life, but your mentality starts to adjust. So that's chapter 2. Let's go to chapter 3. Chapter 3, verse 1 to 8. Next, please. And verse 9 too, please. Now, usually when we read this passage, how do we interpret it? Right. We think that actually everything is, we try to immediately jump to the conclusion, right? Saying that, oh, God makes everything good in his time. So there's a time of everything. Verse 11. But if you look at the context, when preacher using how many totally? 14 opposite things to describe something. Totally, if you count it, these 14 actions are totally opposite. For example, a time to what? Be born. And a time to die. This is the beginning of the description. And the end, what is it? A time to war, a time to peace. Now, if you think about this 14 description, start with life and death and end with war and peace. And actually, these two things we cannot really control. You cannot control when you are born, you cannot control when you die. And of course, people die in the war, and people were born in the peace time. And war you cannot really control. So he used these 14 opposite things to describe something. Actually, he wants to tell us what? What is the profit of doing it? It's boring. It's meaningful, right? For example, a time to be born and a time to die. You're born, you die, then why are you living? Right? For example, you plant something and you pluck it up, and you have to plant again, you pluck it up. Just this cycle, once again, sounds familiar, right? In chapter 1, the cycle is never ending. You do something, but after a while, somebody will be another time doing something opposite than what you have done just now. Whether you have control or not, sometimes you have control, but sometimes you don't have control. For example, a time to kill during the war, a time to heal. After you're killing each other in the battlefield, what happened? You send a soldier back to the Red Cross. Or the hospital, or for example, put out the bullet and then fixing the arms or try to save the life so much. And then after the soldier was healed, what happened? Send him back to the battlefield to be killed. Have you seen movie, a war movie, World War I, World War II, or even Afghan War? You know, all the soldier being killed so much in the battlefield, and then they will rush to be treated. After they get well, they say, and then they die again. Then you might ask, what's the point of doing all this? So actually, from verse 1 to verse 10, the small conclusion is verse 9. What is the profit of doing all this? If you have to plan something, at the end you have to pluck it out, and then you have to plan again, well, what's the point? So actually that was really the context, trying to prove that all these things going on in life is quite empty. It's quite empty. But at the same time, he also mentioned one thing. He also mentioned another level of understanding, which is verse 11. You have to underline verse 11, one of the very good, beautiful verse. Let's underline verse 11. Let's read it all together. And there's a song, there's a hymn devoted to it too, right? Let's read 11 together loud. Keep us awake. 1, 2, 3. Underline this verse. That is one of the most important verses in the book of Ecclesiastes. Even though life is so futile, empty, vanity, no meaning, boring, but actually that was not like that at the beginning. That was not what God made it. That was not the purpose of God creating a world without meaning. When God created this world, God has made everything good in His time, isn't it? Genesis chapter 1, after each day when God created something, what did God say? What did God say? It was good. It was exceedingly good. There was no sickness, no death, no war, no hatred. There was no nothing which is negative. All those negative things that came out, even though it happens, is because of sin. So, verse 11 is backtracking the original perfect world that when God created, He has made everything good in His time. You must explain it like that. Otherwise, you say, oh, if it's time to war, then God make war. Right? God make people fight. Or time to hate, or time to love. Oh, God make people hate me. In God's time, everything good. You cannot explain like this, okay? Don't interpret like this. God makes everything good in His time is back to day one. The pre-Adamic sin era. But now, for us, we believe that God is in control, even living in this world as a Christian. Sometimes bad things happen to us. But we still believe God is in control. If God allow this to happen to me, there must be a good purpose. God makes everything good in His time, and that is okay. If you interpret that way, it's okay. And there's a hymn called In His Time, right? How many of you know that song? In His Time. It's a nice song. Maybe you can sing it someday. When I was in NYTS 20-some years ago, we learned that song. I think we should learn this song this time because this is one of the book, right, that we study. But anyway, now, the second part of verse 11 is even more important. God put eternity in the heart of man. Now, underline this part, very important. That explains why all these physical things cannot satisfy human heart. That explains exactly why. Who can try to relate this fact with this verse? Anyone have any idea why human heart cannot be satisfied from things that under the sun? Anyone? Any good try? Yes, sister. What's her name, sister? Victoria. Yes, Victoria. Yes, Victoria. Yes. How can you relate this to you?
Mhm.
Exactly. That is exactly the point. Very good. Thank you very much. Now, all these things are so-called limited. All these things are time-sensitive. This means they will expire. When the things expire, when this effect expires, sometimes when you die, you expire. Or material, you can never have infinity material. You cannot have all this, you cannot have infinity in the material world. But our heart is infinity. Our
Our heart has something called eternity. Eternity.
So when God created our heart, he's just like a programmer. You know, God, can you imagine God just like a programmer, writing a program? Programming our heart, our body, what we need. When God created Adam, the way he created Adam and Eve is different than the way he created animal. Because animal has no soul. So animal is very happy if every day they eat and drink, they have a place to sleep, and then they mate in the mating season, and then they are happy their whole life. They will not think much. That's why animal doesn't need religion. You never see a dog church or a church for the lizard or elephant, right? And you never see a group of animal in the Africa continent or the Paris. You see, oh, you never see a group of lion come together and say, oh, let's sing worship and praise and clap hands, right? You never see monkey or sesame do that, right? But you see, human does it everywhere. Wherever there are human civilization, no matter it's the Inuit, it is the in Africa, in the jungle, the native, or South America, or Asian China, India, Egypt, even though the religion were different, but all human civilization had their own religion. Why? Even they sin, after human beings sin, they departed from God, they still have this need. That's why they invent their own religion, to try to satisfy their heart. But, you know, when God made man, God put this eternity in their heart. How many of you can define eternity? What does eternity mean? Anyone can define eternity. What is the closest you can describe? What is eternity? Victoria, maybe you can try again. What is eternity in your... Forever. What is forever? Never ending. In this world, there's nothing that's forever. It's never ending. There's an advertisement many years ago for diamond, right? They said, what? Diamonds are forever. That's why so many women want a big ring, a diamond ring for their marriage. Symbolize never-ending love. But can diamond be forever? There's no way. You can lose it. Can a marriage be forever? No way. Nowadays, half of the marriage ends. So there's nothing is forever. But God programmed this needs of forever inside a human heart. So material are not forever. That's why material cannot satisfy that part. So that's very easy to understand. So the preacher now bringing one of, he's building up his theme. You can see he's building up.
He's trying to prove all this are vanity. Well, it's a sub-theme, and then you can still enjoy life. But he's moving more of focusing. How to have a true, satisfactory
and fulfilling life from this midst of all this vanity. Now, verse 11 is a turning point. If you realize that you have the eternal needs, then you'll start from moving upwards. So as the book moves on, you'll see it talk less about vanity or under the sun, but it will talk more about how to find solution.
So we'll see more and more solution to give us direction of how to live a meaningful life. Okay, we'll continue tonight. Let's pray in silence.